Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Can we talk tipping for a second? I was just I've got to get this off my chest. I'm always confounded. Not sure how I'm supposed to tip. Like David just said that he spent $95.
Good Lord! That's a lot of money for a hot dog. How about I give you 68 cents? You let me fill up the bun with relish.
Are we supposed to give 20% on top of that?
Yes.
Mully and the Cheapskate. You don't want that.
That's you're
weekday mornings, 5:30.
You're not Mully.
You can't be the guy that walks in and they look at you.
Yeah, Cheapskate's here. Okay. Take your time walking over to help that.
Him
idiot.
Again. Whose turn is it?
Excuse me, sir. We got your change.
No, that's for you. That's your tip.
Oh, no. I insist. You take it. You obviously need this more than I do.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw. 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Hey, guys. I listen to you guys every morning. I appreciate everything you guys do.
Let's go.
I would say I am quoted out of context there, Brandon. Mully and Haw on The Score. I am not a cheapskate. I always tip. What I said was I'm now confounded about the fact that there are non-services performed, but I'm expected to tip.
Good morning, Mully.
Everywhere you go, you got a tip now.
Yes, good morning.
I'm surprised
Tuesday.
I don't have to tip at the Jewel.
I think that's a fair way to look at it because everywhere you go, you get the little screen that you will use your card. You know, it's easy, convenient, tap and go. But when you tap before you go, you've got a tip.
My buddy's in town. We hooked up. We went out for a sandwich. We get there. The guy is like, you know, we just order a sandwich. I mean, we order two sandwiches.
Yes.
That's it. The guy's like, oh, you know, put your card here. Do you want a tip? You've got to say what you're going to tip. And I'm like, you know, all right, you know, give him a tip. But I'm like begrudgingly give him a tip. Then the guy's like, oh, we don't have any tomatoes. We're out of tomatoes.
Give me that back.
We're out of cucumbers. You know, does that matter to you? And I was like, well, are they on the sandwich? You know, well, normally they would be, but we don't. So what is on the sandwich then?
That's a good question.
Well,
what did you get?
Turkey.
Okay.
He's like, well, we have some vegan pesto and turkey. And I was like,
vegan pesto.
You know, what am I supposed to say? That's the pesto they make. Whatever fancy arse juice shop we're
still,
at.
The point being, you tipped before you knew what you were getting.
I'm just saying, like, if you told me you have no tomatoes, I might suggest, hey, the Jewel is literally at the end of the block.
I thought of you over the weekend.
Run over there and get a tomato and chop it up.
I thought of you picking up some food over the weekend. I get to the place, it's a restaurant, pick up some food, and you have a choice.
It's yes.
I drove to the place, I picked up the food, I pay for the food, and then I'm asked if I want to add 20%.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
And you feel bad if you don't.
Well, you got to do it.
You got to do it.
But I'm
it's for the children.
Disgruntled.
It's for the children.
I've seen certain places, too, where you go in and they already add the tip and they try to turn it around and make you sign it. So you got to go in there and you feel bad if you got to adjust it. Like,
you have to deprogram.
No, like, what are you doing?
I did not press that button. I do not want to tip 25%.
To be honest with you, I would prefer that. I would prefer you put the tip on it and then just give me the bill. So I don't have to do the quick math of how much.
And
do
you don't
I
have to make
you
a choice. One less choice you
yes,
have to make.
I don't need three options.
One less value judgment you
wanna,
have to make.
Do you want to be a cheapskate? Not give me enough money.
Well, thank you, Brandon, for that intro.
Do you want to tip the proper amount? Or would you like to just go crazy over here?
I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Anyway, I'm sorry, but that it occurred to me yesterday when they had no tomatoes. Uh-huh. Yeah, I went back in my mind to thinking about the whole tip thing again, and I was...
Well, they're not going to give you a discount.
No, they didn't give
They
me
should probably,
the
right? Yeah, no, tomatoes should be the 5% discount.
Thank you.
I think that's fair.
Either that or someone break down, get on your scooter and go to the Jewel. Buy a tomato.
Well, that's like at certain places, certain sandwich shops. I think I might have told this story, but it's for having, airing out our grievances. So there's a certain sandwich place where they won't add shredded lettuce to certain sandwiches unless you want to like pay the upcharge. But I didn't want the tomatoes, the onions, and the mayonnaise on the sandwich. Didn't want that. I just wanted
in lieu of that.
I wanted a trade. I wanted to make a swap. I wanted some shredded lettuce to replace the tomatoes, onions, and mayo that come on this.
Lettuce?
And they're like, we could get fired if we do that. That's what they claimed.
Well, that's a lot.
At a sandwich shop. We could get fired
that's
if we
lot.
Do that.
You're asking a lot.
No, so I made them give me the tomatoes and the onions on a separate piece of wax paper.
And then just threw it
and
out.
I threw them away.
See?
I threw them away.
Probably a guy like Dustin was in that sandwich shop before me.
Yeah, but...
Throw them away, I hate to do, but you're going to make me pay for it, and you won't let me have the lettuce instead, then I'm throwing it away.
You remember this much more than they do.
Where is my squirt of mayo?
I'm sure
I didn't want that either.
Yeah. I know.
I didn't ask for that on the side of the paper.
They had a squirt at the top of the thing so you could throw it out.
Would have really been over the top.
Yeah, that would have been hilarious.
It was over the top enough as it is, but.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. What are you going to do? It's just life, and it's okay, but don't make me out to be a cheapskate. It's just I no longer understand what tips mean.
Brandon,
or why
note
you
to
give
self,
them or,
yeah. Never that open again.
All right. Thank you, buddy. You're the one who called me a cheapskate.
I was kidding.
Just because I questioned it.
I was kidding.
What's going on with this?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Upsell me. All right. So listen, the Cubs got another good outing from Shota Imanaga. And how do we term their loss? That was like a really, I get it. The bullpen did allow, Hayden Wesneski came in and allowed two runs and they lost 2-0. But I think that was an offense. I think the offense lost that game. Lopez was good.
Ronaldo Lopez was very good.
You've got to score.
Bats didn't show up and the Braves, pitched a good game, and this happens when you play against very good teams, and the Braves are one of them. So Ronaldo Lopez did what he needed to do. Showed a pitch great.
Yeah,
I pitched himself out of trouble.
He was in trouble all night, though.
Wait, it's the Braves.
I know, but he
there was traffic. He had to navigate through it. And
did he have seven hits allowed and four walks? That's not him.
Struck out 8 though. I mean, he's going to be.
Listen, I love the guy. I'm just saying it was weird.
The standards have become so high for him that he did not meet him based on what he has done to this point.
Well,
he pitched well enough to win.
Right.
And his pitch count was up. They stayed with him. That was good. They went to the bullpen. Hayden Wesneski, they got two runs with two outs. That was untimely, but it wasn't terrible. The offense just didn't do it. And Craig Counsell got ejected, and he had a point in the fourth inning. Ronald Acuña Jr., your guy, he went through. That was not a check swing. And the first base umpire said, safe! He had made the call before Counsell even pretty much glanced. And then he ejected him from the game.
The first base umpire ejected Counsell for whatever he said about the check swing call.
Yeah.
And then Counsell walked out to see him. And I felt that was like a nice moment of showing the guy up.
I liked that because he wanted to find out why he was ejected. And I don't blame him because, number one, the call was wrong. Can you not review those calls?
That's his first ejection as a Cubs manager.
I think he didn't really get his money's worth. He was heard, but it wasn't a crazy tantrum. It was just he wanted to make sure he was heard from.
By walking out and talking to him.
The guy embarrassed himself. That was a terrible call.
Yeah, that was a bad call. But I really felt like the calls at home plate were just as bad.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I just felt like it was a bad night for the umpires. It happens.
It happens, but that was unfortunate because it was the second time where I think it was Acuña Jr., the first time as well, with check swing, he went through. I think he got the benefit of the doubt because he is who he is. Mm. Junior Valentine, first base umpire, overreacted, missed a call, and then he got mad because Counsell was yelling at him, and he threw him out of the game.
Yeah, that was weird.
Undeserved.
That was weird.
But no Cubs, they didn't bring their bats, and you're going to pay for that. Because Ronaldo Lopez, 5 innings, he only gave up 2 hits, struck out 4. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good starting pitcher.
Yeah, he looked great. He looked great. Looked a lot better than he ever did in the South Side.
But now put some pressure on tonight. Jameson Taillon, Chris Sale. Chris Sale's really pitching the way that you're used to seeing Chris Sale pitch. And it's going to be a tough challenge for the Cubs. This series is now in some pretty big doubt because you need to win the show to start.
Well, it's Miller time. Let's put it that way. There's a whole new world that we're living in now.
Not really.
No?
No.
They made.
I like the way you're trying to build up the Cub trade.
I said to you.
Do you have the promo cut already?
When I got in this morning, the first thing I said to you was, hey, Miller, do you know anything about him? Do you know Tyson Miller at all? I'm afraid I don't follow the Mariners enough to know him. And then you were like, you know, no, he's and I said, what about Jake Slaughter? Do you know Jake Slaughter? If you knew how good he was as a prospect, right, then you'd have a good. And you said that that's a guy only Jim Callis would know.
I said he has a name only Jim Callis could love, because he probably knows where he ranks in the Cubs system. I don't think it's very high.
Okay.
As for Tyson Miller, he was DFA'd by the Mariners.
Right. Now, I mean,
former Cub draft pick, 2016, made his debut with the Cubs in 2020. Well-traveled right-hander. He's a guy. He's a guy. He's a live body that's actually been pretty good. 309 ERA, 12-1 K to walk rate in 11 innings this year. But he was so good this year, the Mariners DFA'd him? So,
if you've ever in your life had to do some garbage picking, you know that one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yes, I think that's definitely the definition of the neighborhood garage sale.
That's right.
When you, which is coming up, by the way,
you can get a nice bargain.
Walk
you got
around.
A garage sale coming up?
Yeah, I think our neighborhood does. Usually, it's around this time of year.
Wow.
It's a Saturday morning, kind of disturbs the whole flow of traffic throughout the Saturday morning. And you take a lap or two, walk the dog, kind of investigate. Maybe there's something that appeals to you.
Maybe there's a Picasso.
Maybe there's a painting in the garage
underneath that painting of dogs playing poker.
Maybe there's, like, I don't know, an old love seat that appeals to you.
I love a felt painting of dogs playing poker. Let me get this. And then you find out there's a masterpiece beneath it. The art thief who lived next door.
That would actually be a good movie, wouldn't it?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
The art thief that lived next door.
Yeah. Let's go.
You can see the plot. Yeah, I used to like the garage sale. Usually, I haven't probably in a couple of years, but it's a nice little excursion on a Saturday morning.
I'm trying to think of the last thing I bought at a garage sale. It might be like a comic book or, you know, something like that I thought might be worth something. Baseball card.
It's been a while. A baseball card at a garage sale?
Hans Wagner.
Right.
No.
No.
I'm just saying.
I wouldn't do that.
That's where you get your bargains, though, right?
You could find some bargains
like that. It's like Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah,
Neighborhood.
That's what it is. Yeah. I think I've had more luck selling things at a garage sale than buying things in recent years. We'll sometimes put some things out for people to kind of just.
And how do you price them?
Make me a deal. Cheap.
You price them to go?
Price them to go.
All right.
If you're putting something out for a garage sale, I don't think the
$200.
The objective is not profit.
No.
The objective is removal.
$5 for that.
Yeah.
$400.
That's when you find out how cheap people can be. Yeah, really, $5 is too much for this old bed frame? Come on. Just take it and go. And we digress.
Don't go on about bed frames.
Tyson Miller, is probably the equivalent of a garage sale purchase.
Okay. All right.
Might work out in the spare room. It might be something that's quite comfortable on occasion, but I wouldn't necessarily think that it's going to be a permanent fixture.
Could he be worse than Adbert Alzolay? I mean, probably not, right?
Probably not, which, by the way, Adbert Alzolay goes on the injured list. Mully called it.
I didn't call it.
Mully called it.
And I don't take it lightly that a guy has a forearm injury and his forearm bothered him. I don't just assume that the devious Cubs have made up an injury to get him on the IL.
I'm glad you don't, because it's not. That's not fair. That's not fair.
Yeah.
And you're being,
But
I think he's got an injury.
We talked to John Heyman yesterday and suggested, like, maybe the guy needs a couple weeks, send him to Arizona, do something with him, put him in the old pitch lab.
Well, we just saw that essentially happen with Kyle Hendricks, not to diminish the possible back issues that he was dealing with.
Okay.
But I still am a little skeptical about the Kyle Hendricks injury, air quotes for those on Twitch, injury with the back. But Adbert Alzolay, if you read the Sun-Times this morning, Matty Lee described the post-game victory on Sunday, the celebration. You know, Alzolay is always the high-five guy. Always, even after tough save, the high-five guy.
And he's low-five?
And no, he was congratulating people with his left hand because his right arm might have been compromised.
He totally went low-five.
That was a very good detail. Stop mocking it.
He couldn't put his hand over.
Stop mocking it. That was a nice little reporting detail, I thought.
Wanted to still do it, but he was trying to come up with something.
Give me the low five. That was still hurt.
That's how they knew he was injured.
He went low. When you go high, we go low.
You take the high road.
When you go low, we go high. That's the way it goes, right?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember my.
No, that's good.
Favorite Michelle Obama isms.
But listen, the fact is, you don't make light of that, and I hope he's okay.
I don't know that he is.
I don't know that he's been okay for a while. I mean, obviously that hurt at that moment, but who knows?
Tommy Hotovy was clear in talking yesterday after the injury was announced that, and we'll talk to Tommy tomorrow. This didn't seem to be something that was a previous issue.
Right.
And so, but it does make you wonder. He clearly has not been the same pitcher.
No.
And if there's some forearm tightness, you hope that it's not a sign of anything more serious. But you could understand if we find out later that he has been compromised all season long. This is not the same pitcher that they were dealing with in the second half of last year.
No, he's really struggled, and he's been prone to giving up the home run ball, as we all know, and he's had some blown saves, as we all know. I do think you need him, and I do think that when you look at the Cubs, you know, we generally talk about all the injuries. I think this is the 14th player on the injured list.
Yes.
Is that the number?
14.
He's also, I saw Tony Andracki tweeted out yesterday, he's also the fifth of the opening day eight, their eight-man bullpen. Five guys are gone from that bullpen. You've got four of them on IL now, right? Him, Merriweather, who else? Oh, gosh, my mind is shot.
Amante?
Yeah, Amante, yeah. And Wick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Luke Little down in Iowa. So that's five out of the eight guys you started with. And Kwas was brought up. Yeah, he's pitched one time in the last month. He was brought back up to replace Edbert when he went on the IL. So,
he's had a shuttle back and forth, even more than Wisniewski.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate because injuries have really interfered with the Cubs' bullpen consistency. Merriweather and Alzolay were two guys they counted on mightily last year.
Yes.
And they have been injured and inconsistent, and that's not good. So
you could argue, and I mean, this would not be an argument I'd want to make, but I could nod my head while someone was making it. You could argue that of all the guys that have been on the IL, that Julian Merriweather is the guy they miss the most.
Well, I think you can say that. I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, but
I
wouldn't make the argument.
Here's the thing is that you can say that because he has pitched the least. So he has had fewer chances to disappoint you. Right.
Well, yeah.
So we're basing what they're missing.
You're based on what he did last year.
Yeah.
So if Alzolay had been injured to start the season, you'd be like,
oh God. Wow, how are they doing this without Edward Alzolay? Nobody would have guessed he would have been as bad as he was. So Merriweather, I don't know. Volatility of bullpens is a certainty in Major League Baseball. But just let me read you this lead, okay? It's just to back up my point because I think it was well done and it's something I didn't notice. This is Matty Lee in this morning's Sun Times. After the Cubs' 5-4 10-inning victory against the Pirates Sunday, right-hander Edbert Alzolay, who closed out the game, went through the handshake line with his gloved left hand extended across his body and his right arm hanging at his side.
Mm.
For another player, that might not have stood out, but the strength of Alzolay's high fives after wins had become a running joke among teammates who braced for impact. The next day, the Cubs put Alzolay on the 15-day injured list.
Because of the high five line?
With what they called a right forearm strain and recalled side armor Jose Kwas to reinforce the bullpen.
Nothing to do with how he's pitching.
Yes.
It's just he didn't have the hard high five. They know the players going through the line have noticed.
He's
lacking in
his
high five.
He didn't high five because his arm was hurt.
Right. His arm's hanging. He's left-handed glove.
Nice job, Matty Lee.
What do you do with that? I mean, how do you – a guy offers you his left-handed glove like that. That thing's smelly. Give me an elbow.
Fist
pump. Let's pretend we're back in COVID.
I hope it doesn't come out that he injured himself celebrating. I doubt that it would.
No, I don't think it will.
I think it is an injury, though.
But
I think it's unfortunate.
The fact that they put him on the injured list as fast as they did. And I mean, Craig Counsell used that to kind of prove that he was hurt.
Right.
And I'm willing to go along with what he said.
Yeah, now they have a dilemma. They get, as you say, Tyson Miller, not going to move the needle much. Hayden Wisniewski coming out of the bullpen we saw last night. He had a tough – I mean, it wasn't – he gave up two-out runs, and they were a double and a couple single, and it wasn't ideal, but that's where he's going to be pitching.
Our squinty-eyed producer is giving a stare down for some reason. What was that?
At me?
Yes.
I missed that.
Did he say something?
It just last night was really upsetting, just overall.
Generally speaking.
Again, as you mentioned, Mully, Shota wasn't at his best, but still good enough, right? When you don't allow a run, I don't care if you're walking, when you don't allow a run through five innings of a big league game, you're doing something right. It's just that the offense is just, you know, we're almost like to Theo days, like the offense is broke. It started really good, and then it got into the home run or nothing.
Christopher Morel fouled the ball off his foot.
Something to be worried about.
And he did not take
first base. He is banged up.
He looked banged up.
He does that like once a game, it seems like.
So tonight we're going to have Mastroboni and Nicky Madrigal in the lineup at second and third, or are we going to get a Patrick Wisdom start at third?
I want Patrick Wisdom in the lineup.
I don't know where I read it, but somebody had a comment on a story about counsel getting kicked out, and I apologize to whoever, but somebody commented on the bottom. He should have been thrown out the minute he had Happ as DH.
Yes, I thought that was a big problem. Ian Happ DHing.
I nearly texted.
Struck out three times. I think his fourth at bat, he hit into a double play.
Right when there was an opportunity. Right.
I'm just saying.
Chris Sale should mean that Ian Happ gets the night off.
But I just wonder if Morel's out. If that
kind of
makes it. I don't know if we can get away with that.
You definitely could get away with it. I don't know if they will try, but you have, Madrigal at second, Wisdom at third if Morel needs the night off. I think Morel plays. He's a gamer, and I think he needs to be in the lineup against Chris Sale. And I think Patrick Wisdom should be your DH.
It's going to be a real interesting matchup. I'm very curious. I mean, Sale's having a really nice
Bringing back shades of, White Sox Chris Sale, Red Sox Chris Sale. He's looking very good. Did not expect this. I thought he was almost close to being done.
If you want to, in the future, you could just say he's bringing back shades of Sox Chris Sale.
Okay.
And we'll apply whatever image we want without clarifying that the White Sox had to trade him because they couldn't win with him and then he won a World Series.
Thank you for editing me for brevity.
I don't need to go through
Sox
all that.
Sox Sale.
What you're trying to say is that he's a good pitcher.
I think what I'm trying to say, you're not going to get Garage Sale Chris Sale to keep our theme alive.
But how about this? We have a texter who wants tips for a garage sale. How do I go about it? Oh, my God. He's coming to your house.
You could definitely, if you want to overpay, you can overpay. Tips for...
But that's interesting. So what you're saying is you view a garage sale as a chance for you to really try to get the deal down.
I think the prices of any garage sale item, they're just suggestions. It's just a starting point.
Okay. So if it's like a set of silver... and they want to charge you like whatever. $7.
Well, you take $5 for that.
You know you're going to melt it down, and you get
right.
Okay,
yeah.
But you're going to get a deal first.
The art thief next door. See, that's going to be in my head all day. When I go home and I pull into my driveway, I'm going to look at my neighbors a little differently today because I might be living to the art thief next door.
You never know. Get one of those dog paintings. Poker players.
We have dog paintings all over our house.
Just the dog paints?
No. My dog's quite a talented painter. No. Paintings of dogs. My wife likes paintings of dogs. So
my dog has no nose. How does he smell? Awful. Honey Python. Remember the killer joke? Back in the day. All right. We've got so much to get to. There's a ton of really interesting news.
Oh, my gosh. There is.
I mean, goodness gracious. Name a sport, and we're going to have a chance to tear into it. We're going to do that next. We're going to talk about all of the stories of the day. It's the Pick Six. It's Mully and Haw. It's the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Visit feelgreatillinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or weight loss options. Here we go. What's your review of Shota's show in Atlanta? What do you expect tonight with Jameson Taillon going against Christopher Sale?
I would say that Shota was not his usual self. He wasn't as dominant. I mean, he did allow some hits, and worse than that, he walked some guys. But he's got a hell of a move to first base, right? So he can pick you off once you get on. And I thought that he did more than enough to win. He battled. He battled through five innings, and he got himself in some trouble, but he got out of it. And that was really interesting to see. I really appreciated how well he pitched. That's a good team. I get that. But how well he pitched despite not seeming to be able to have his usual kind of bag of tricks or his trickery working in the same fashion. So I thought the fact that he could go five innings and he could have a lot of guys on base, but that he could keep them without a run is exactly what he's supposed to do. I'm pretty sure that's the first of his starts that they've actually lost, right? Haven't they won every game that he started?
Yes.
He doesn't have every
win. Previous seven, yes.
So
would have set a record if they would have won the eighth.
Yes. So that gave me a little pause. You hope the magic's not over. You want that to keep going. But he did his role. He did his part, and he was good enough. As far as tonight is concerned, I don't want to accuse anyone of being, you know, devious in the way they put things together, but it seems to me that Jameson Taillon was moved not because of his back problem, but because this is a good spot for him against a good team. And they felt that the professor could come up and handle Pittsburgh, and so they brought him up and they had him pitch in Pittsburgh as opposed to Iowa, which then allowed them to strengthen their staff for this outing of Jameson Taillon in the second game against Atlanta. And going against Chris Sale, I think he'll need to be good, and I think he will be good. And I think that just as an observer of baseball in the year 2024, I think you want five innings out of him, and if he could not allow a run or keep it close, that's what you want. That's where we're at. We're not looking for seven innings out of anyone ever.
Well, after throwing 90-plus pitches the start before, I was a little concerned. That was something I was looking at, how he was going to come out of that, meaning Shota. Gave him an extra day, and then last night he goes out there and goes 98 pitches.
Wow.
You know, so he's getting closer to the 100-pitch mark. Now, the problem is when you're throwing 98 pitches and you're just getting through five, that's a little troubling, but as we said, he had four walks, gave up some hits, but got out of everything when he needed to get out of it. I'm not going to get down on Shota Imanaga. The biggest takeaway is that he was able to go back-to-back starts with 90-plus pitches. That, I think, is pretty impressive, since that was one of the things you were worried about going in, that he would not be able to handle that kind of stress because he wasn't asked to do that in his homeland when he threw. You know, tonight's pitching matchup, really excited. I'm looking forward to it. The problem is that I don't like it as a Cubs fan. I don't like it. The Cubs offense has been bad, and it's going to get worse with Christopher Morel. I'm going to say he's out tonight. I would be shocked if he's in there. I don't think he's not a gamer. I'd love to see him tough it out, but I think he's out tonight.
Probably so. As for Shota, I think we knew that he could entertain us. I knew that he could pitch well, but he competed last night. And he survived five innings more than he dominated, like we're used to seeing him. He still didn't give up a run. I think he was happy about that. Pitched through traffic. When he was striking out Matt Olson in the third inning and called out on strikes, that was a great pitch, and he celebrated. And you thought, okay, this is a guy who knows how to pitch. And that's what you saw as much as anything last night, and that's encouraging. He looked like an ace struggling through five. 98 pitches is encouraging because of what his previous start was against the Padres. But I think he proved a little bit something last night, and he gave the Cubs a chance to win. Wesneski pitches three innings, gives up two runs, and your bats didn't show up. So this is why that happened. That's why they lost more than anything. But Shota was as advertised. They didn't win for the first time in eight starts, but it's not his fault. Tonight, Chris Sale, load up with right-handers. If Christopher Morel can't go, you've got to play Patrick Wisdom. I wonder who else. They're limited. They're limited with who they can go to. They don't have a lot of options from the right side in terms of pop and power. So Mike Tauchman has got to play almost every night because he's been their best outfielder or most consistent available outfielder. and you hope that they can get to Sale. You hope the Sale is a little wild, but he hasn't been this year. I think we're going to see Sale and Tyone in another low-scoring game, another game where you're going to have to play good defense and run the bases well. But I don't like this matchup for the Cubs. Chris Sale is dealing.
It's an interesting question, I think.
The Cubs placed reliever Adbert Alzolay on the IL with forearm tightness. He reported this after his last outing in Pittsburgh. Alzolay becomes the 14th Cub to go on the IL. Is this good or bad news?
Well, I think if we figured it was or assumed it was a phantom injury and we were like, wink, wink, nod, nod, he's going to Arizona for an extended vacation, we could kid about it being good news because, goodness sakes, you don't want to see Adbert Alzolay on the mound in a high-leverage situation again, or at least for a while. But if he is indeed injured and there are indications that he could be, then that's bad news because I agree with Craig Counsell when he says the Cubs need Adbert Alzolay to do what they want to do this year. It's certainly, if he's healthy, it gives you a chance to rehabilitate his season, to resuscitate his career, whatever way you want to phrase it. I think that he's a live arm who had had success last year, and you can't just get bad that quickly, can you? Can he fall off a cliff that fast? Maybe. But if he's injured, then you can't answer the question. And it's unanswered now, and it's incomplete. So it's bad news. It's bad news because you don't ever want to see somebody suffer an injury, especially somebody as likable as Adbert Alzolay is, despite his inconsistency this year. He's still an easy guy to pull for.
I'm going to try to be glass half full here. I'm going to say it's good news. One, it's going to get him out of here for a little bit, maybe gets his mind right. And I think I'm going to compare this to the Kyle Hendricks situation. He's going to get out of here for a little bit. I don't know that Kyle was as hurt as we might have believed. Not again, I'm not trying to, I don't want the Cubs to get investigated. I'm sure every pitcher has forearm tightness. Everybody's got, you know, it's the difference. Is it an ouchie or is it an injury? Which one is it? Is it something that massage and some Advil can take care of? Or is it something that is going to affect how you pitch? TBD, but I actually think this is a good thing for him to get out of here for a couple of days.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that thought they needed to do something to make sure that he somehow improved. This sounds more injury related than you would like, but with the forearm tightness and this is concerning. But I think that in the long run, You need that guy to get back, and you need to figure out. He has no minor league options. This is the only way that you could figure out a way to get him help. I hope he's not hurt. I hope it's not a serious injury, but I do welcome the fact that he can get a break here. I hope he's okay, but I hope that he also improves over this period of time, however long it may be. I think they need him, and I think they need him to get better, and as I mentioned earlier, they are now down. They've got 5 of the 8 guys that started the season in the bullpen gone, and it was interesting because it's obviously now it's Alzolay, but Julian Merriweather, Yency Almani, Drew Smyly.
Oh yeah, Smyly.
I forgot about Smyly. Yeah. So those are the guys. You know, left-handed guy.
Turn that frown upside down.
That's how Dustin's guy, Love Lady guy here.
You know, that's a really good question.
All right. The White Sox will play a straight doubleheader later today after last night's rain cancellation. But the injury news was the bigger story at 35th and Shields, with Pedro Grifol saying that Luis Robert is expected to be playing games in Arizona by the end of the week. Rehab to follow. Danny Mendick will begin rehab assignment in Charlotte today. And even Yoan Moncada has been taking some at-bats, although he's a couple weeks behind Robert. Also, Leon is scheduled to start throwing BP soon and won't be able to rehab. He won't need a rehab assignment, so that's, I guess, good news. What's the best news of all of those little kernels of injury news we went over there?
Well, I mean, the way you evaluate the White Sox is not by seeing who's available, but by seeing who can be made unavailable by July 30th, right? They're the biggest date on the calendar for the White Sox isn't some series they're going to play. It's the trade deadline. It's when they can get people moved and out of here. That's kind of all they want. So I hope they don't trade Luis Robert. I'd like him to get healthy, and I'd like them to build around him. He's young enough, and he's under control enough that you could do pretty well with him. I think if you could get Moncada back and he could play the month of July, maybe you can move him. They desperately would like to move him. I don't even know where he's going to play. I've been thinking about this. Like, Danny Mendick is going on a rehab assignment.
How's Baltimore?
And but I mean, who's playing third base? Aren't you sticking with Brian Ramos? I know he didn't make the MLB's top 100 list this year.
I hope so.
But he's been playing well, and he's been doing well. I'm just saying, if guys are coming back, does he go back to Double A, or does he stay with the big league club because he seems to have earned his spot? And if Moncada comes back and you have a third baseman, where do you play him? I mean, I know these are issues for another time, but the big date, July 30th trade deadline, and you want all these Sox players back because all they want to do is trade him anyway.
Well, that makes sense, is you want to get them all up and running by then so that, I mean, you're not going to be able to move a guy. I don't care how dynamic, even, you know, you get pennies on the dollar for Robert Jr. if you were to trade him and he was not up and running, as we like to say. So it's positive news that these guys are going to come back. I didn't think we'd see Robert or Moncada again, and apparently we're going to. But for how long, I guess, is the question.
I didn't think we'd say the name Dominic Leone on this show ever. Who's he?
He's a relief pitcher that the Cubs may trade for.
Okay. And he doesn't need a rehab assignment.
Okay, he does not need a rehab.
No, he's ready to go.
I'm glad we cleared that one up. Luis Robert and Yoan Moncada, they're going to come back, and then what? Then what? You want them to play so you can trade them. Yeah, can they stay healthy? Can they stay healthy enough so you can trade them? Who's going to trade for them? I mean, Luis Robert Jr., yes. You're going to have a conversation. But until he proves he can stay healthy, I think your return is going to be limited. Moncada, oh my gosh, you're going to have to eat so much of that salary. You're going to be overfed. You're going to be bloated.
Aren't you doing that anyway?
You're eating so much salary.
Aren't you doing that right now?
Give me some more salary. I mean, you're eating so much salary that he.
But that's
you can't trade
you've
him.
You've been doing that.
You
since
eat
you
your
got
money.
Him.
You eat the money you get paid from. Wait. You're eating your. Check?
He's actually eating money.
He's eating. You're going to have to eat his salary.
David eats dollars like salary.
Oh, my gosh.
I wasn't sure if we were talking about celery or salary.
Salary.
Okay.
Or celery. A little ranch dressing on either.
I just wanted to clarify.
I'll go with that.
I was getting confused there for a second.
Come on.
When are we eating? Celery or salary?
Danny Mendick. Oh, my gosh. I can't wait till he gets back.
Make fun of Danny Mendick.
I'm just saying, if they send Brian Ramos down now, oh, my gosh. He's here for the rest of the season, isn't he? Unless he starts to struggle mightily. Unless he gets in a real bad slump where you have to save him from himself. But Brian Ramos has got to stay. No doubt about it.
Isn't that a good question, though? Where does he play?
Where does he play?
Third base.
Yes. He's your third baseman.
So I'm saying Moncada. You know,
if Moncada
you're trying
comes
to
back,
get rid of Andrew Vaughn, why don't you try first base?
DH. Second base,
come back and play first.
Wherever. I know you're paying him a lot, but I think your third baseman of the future is here in the present right now.
Mookie would just move to the outfield or the infield or wherever they told.
He's no Mookie.
It's not Mookie.
Questions.
Okay. Do you consider it good news that for the Bears, that the Lions have guaranteed Jared Goff $170 million on a 4-year, $212 million contract? Is there any possibility Goff lives up to that deal? In other words, will he lead Detroit to a Super Bowl win?
No, he won't lead Detroit to a Super Bowl win. This is a deserved contract, the way the NFL system works. Jared Goff has earned that salary and contract extension given the way that quarterbacks are paid. He is somebody that is easy to pull for, I think, because this is his second chance and he has taken advantage. But this is good news for the Bears. This is good news for the Bears because I think that even though they have locked up their number one wide receiver in St. Brown, Penei Sewell, they locked up their tackle, they extended their GM, they extended their coach, they are all set. So if you're in Detroit, you're like, all right, winning time, let's go win the Super Bowl. But if you're in the division, you're like, okay, now they can't pay anybody else. Great. because Jared Goff earning what he's earning is going to limit your ability to keep players that you're going to need to keep or to surround that defense with pieces that they're going to need to stop anybody. You've got a really good offense. You've got the smartest guy in the NFL, apparently, and Ben Johnson, even though he wasn't so smart and wanting to stay there, maybe. But that's a debate for another day. This is good news for the rest of the division, I think, because now it becomes tougher to pay everybody and to fill out your roster. It is the NFL reality of paying your quarterback. Let's hope one day the Bears are in this situation.
Well, that's what's interesting about it, David, the last part you said there. You know, so if Jared Goff is getting this, you know, what is Caleb Williams potentially going to get in 5 years? Are we talking $350 million? You know, with 212 of it guaranteed, as an example. I mean, when did Jared Goff lead the Lions to anything other than the postseason? I mean, is Jared Goff more responsible or is Dan Campbell more responsible for the fact that the Lions have made this change that they've made? They've
He's
also drafted well.
He's been good.
I mean, I just think they've got about a two-year window, the Lions, and it's either win it or they are going to have to dismantle that thing because they are going to be in absolute salary cap hell. Salary cap hell. And he's the second highest paid quarterback behind your guy, Joe Burrow. And remind me again what Joe Burrow has ever done.
The Lions have already spent $77.7 million on Jared Goff. And his record is 24-23-1 with the Detroit Lions. That's after last year, where they had the great season and they were a game away from the Super Bowl. I don't think they had a choice but to pay him. But the guaranteed money, $170 million guaranteed, locking the guy up for 4 years, I got to tell you, this is exactly what you said, David. This is preventing them from making other moves. Now, if anyone's paying attention, the salary cap went up 13.6% this year. NFL teams are making so much money, it is unbelievable, and the players need to get paid. So the quarterback's the most important position. Is Jared Goff worth the amount of money he has made in his career? Unequivocally, no. He is not. But he's been to a Super Bowl. Even if it was not the guy that put anybody on his back, he has a chance to go to the Super Bowl. Their only chance to go back to the Super Bowl or go to the Super Bowl for the first time for the Lions to win that playoff game. They won two last year. You got to win three. Their only chance is with him leading their offense. There's nobody out there that they could go and get or swap. Would it be better if they had spent $50 million for Kirk Cousins and then drafted Michael Penix and paid him $10 million? I'm just saying.
I know.
This is the
question.
NFL is crazy.
Good question.
Because there's a lack of quarterbacks and you got to need one to win, and the amount of money you're giving to quarterbacks is over the top.
Can I answer that derisive question real quickly?
Was it derisive?
What Dustin asked me.
Oh, sure.
What has Joe Burrow done? He's 5-2 in the playoffs and he won the AFC Championship. That's what he's done.
Take a swing at him.
The most asked question should be.
Did you see the look he
gave? I did see that.
Did you see that narrow eye?
Yeah, I did see that.
It's Clint Eastwood is staring you down right now.
A lot
now
of bad blood.
In the form of dust.
Bad blood.
Are you looking forward to Tom Brady's Fox debut calling the Cowboys-Browns game in the second window of the opening weekend? Said Brady to the crowd of advertising up fronts. The suits, if you will, in this new role, quote, I know the Cowboys, how important they are to this network. They've got real storylines. Dak Prescott, let's see if he can finally come through. Did he just let that slip out?
Yeah, that was part of his joke. He said, did that just slip out after he said that?
He needs new joke writers. The joke writers were much more funny, I guess, for the roast than they were for the Fox.
I mean, Tom's coming, man. He is. They had Michael Strahan out there. They told the advertisers, hey, you know, here's Tom Brady, his first game. There's going to be no other game on. They've got the second game in the opening week window.
So like that's our like 3:25
kick,
right?
There's no CBS game opposite him. It's a 3:25 kick our time. It'll be Tom Brady talking you through the Dallas Cowboys at the Cleveland Browns, and he said that I know Dallas is America's team. It's hard for me to say that because I played against. Like he was making his own little kind of remarks. What is this? Are we going to hear like really bad jokes about his ex-wife, his ex-girlfriend, his ex-teammate? I don't understand why Tom did that roast. I get that a lot of people liked it. I didn't understand why you would do that to yourself, and why he would do that to himself. And when we talked about other athletes, I couldn't come up with anyone that would sit through that. I guess it depends on how much money they're paying you, but my God, that was pretty rough to hear. And the only thing off limits is Bob Kraft's massage ability, right? Give me a break. Wow. Just crazy stuff. Tom's coming. I'm surprised that he's not playing quarterback, that he's actually going to be in the booth. It seems like it took him a while to work his way to this, but clearly the man likes the tension, and clearly he's interested in getting attention because he's coming to be the broadcaster. I will be watching. I will look forward to seeing him.
I'm curious to see how this goes. Yep. I really am. It didn't go well for Joe Montana when he got in the booth. And then so he went from the booth. Then they tried to put him in the studio show. This was back in the NBC days. I think he was with Ditka and Parcells. I think it was Ditka, Parcells, and Joe Montana. And I don't remember. Somebody in the text land will remember who was the anchor of that. But that was their, like, pregame show. I think Joe Gibbs at one point was part of that mix too. And he just wasn't very good at the role. I think he's going to work hard at it though. That's one thing about Brady. I don't think he half-ass anything. So I think he's in. He's going to work hard. And I'll be curious. I mean, I'll tune in. There's no doubt. And, you know, we'll pull audio and we'll armchair quarterback that thing just like we armchair quarterback everything else.
Yeah, hopefully not too much though.
You're not that interested in doing
I'm in probably the minority here. I'm going to miss Greg Olson. I am not necessarily looking forward to Tom Brady in the booth. It'd be fine. We can evaluate it. I'm not like looking forward to it necessarily. I'm not dreading it either. I just don't have a big level of anticipation. I think that it's crazy to me to think that Fox is paying $375 million on a definite maybe. He may be good. He may be bad. He may be bland. I don't think that yesterday was any sort of indication that he's going to be compelling. The Dak Prescott thing was like, that's not controversial at all. And then he was already kind of, did I really just slip out? Yeah, it did. Hopefully some more compelling things will slip out eventually. But I'm just not necessarily in the dying to hear from Tom Brady camp. I didn't like the roast necessarily. Thought it was a bit much, a bit long. There were funny moments. There were some moments that were over the top as well. So I'll be the wet blanket here. Did not like the roast, and I'm not really dying to see Tom Brady in a booth. I miss Greg Olson.
But he's not – Greg Olson just Greg Olson's not fired.
He's demoted.
He's moved down a peg.
It's not one or the other. It's not a fair – you know, I think Greg Olson was great, but he's certainly not Tom Brady.
Was he not demoted?
Name recognition.
Well, yeah, the name recognition aside.
And Dustin's right. Let's see if he can do it. I mean, but don't you think, David, that just Tom Brady is like his name is bigger than football?
His name is big. That doesn't mean I have to look forward to him announcing a game. I mean, come on. It's just an opinion. Why are you guys so upset?
I don't think we're upset. Big deal. I like Greg Olson, and I don't want it to appear that I'm saying I prefer Tom
Brady. I didn't
say
that.
But he's still working is my point. He didn't get fired.
Yeah.
Got demoted. There's a difference.
He got demoted.
I bet he's still making the same money.
Okay.
So did he really get demoted?
Yes.
Calls one game a week on Sundays for Fox. I mean, it's a pretty good
is
game.
Is he starting?
He does
it's pretty good,
good
game.
Is he starting or is he a sub?
He's starting.
He's second team.
I bet we get a bunch of Greg Olson here in Chicago. I bet we get more Greg Olson than we do Tom Brady in Chicago.
That's cool.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Speaking of the NFL schedule news, it's leaking out all around ahead of tomorrow night's big release. Chicken, David, a bucket of chicken for the release party. But there is also game news in other sports, too. Fox announced they'll broadcast a women's basketball showdown on the 21st day of December between USC and UConn, featuring Juju Watkins and Paige Beckers. Fox College Games, the big noon kickoff. Texas at Michigan on September the 7th. Alabama, Wisconsin on the 14th of September. Michigan and Ohio State on the 30th day of November. What is the must-see game in this bunch?
Yeah, of those games that are listed, I think that Texas at Michigan is the most intriguing. It's a good, tough game for Michigan, defending national champions. That's a tough way to start the season, and it's a tough early game. They could be a one-loss team by the beginning of September. That's going to be tough to repeat that way. Their schedule's really hard, but of all those games, Texas, Michigan. I mean, Alabama, Wisconsin is a good one, but I don't know if that's necessarily one that's going to – without Nick Saban, I don't know how much Alabama – I mean, they'll be good. They'll be really good, but definitely Texas, Michigan.
Well, for me, it's Michigan at Ohio State. I mean, if Ryan Day doesn't win this game, he might be fired on – there aren't 31 days in November. There's only 30, so he might be fired on December 1st. If you're not going to finally – and supposedly Ohio State is just absolutely loaded. It's one of the, if not the best rivalries in college football and potentially sports across the board. Painful for me as a Notre Dame fan to admit that, but it is, especially since Michigan won't play Notre Dame in football anymore for whatever reason. So, yeah, and of course, you know, how is this team going to fare without the greatest coach to ever blow into a whistle, Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah, I think you're both right. I think both those games – are the biggest games. I don't know why, but I am really intrigued by the women's basketball game they announced. I think it's because the winner of that game or whoever wins that matchup, whether it's Juju Watkins, have you ever seen her play? Like, that's the next Caitlin Clark. She's like Mike Jordan, and I know him. I'm sorry, Anthony Edwards. And Paige Beckers is... That will determine who the player of the year is in women's basketball. I don't know if we still care now that Caitlin Clark is gone, but that if you like sports, that's an unbelievable matchup. But the winner is obviously, I mean, it's the Michigan, Texas at Michigan. We'll find out who a lot about college football and Michigan, Ohio State, you know, every year. And you're right, Dustin. That is it. That's a last gasp for Ryan Day. Michigan is... their whole team graduated. You better win that game. And Ohio State's back. So we'll see. I loved hearing those games, though. I loved just the idea that we're kind of planning our schedule. I love that stuff. All right. We've got a really good question for the extra point. We'll get to that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
And Tyler Dunn's GoLongTD.com piece, Dunn included a passage that portrayed Justin Fields as a hard teammate to get along with details about the rift with Nick Foles and described the dysfunction that derailed the quarterback development. What did you think of Dunn's portrayal of the past mistakes and projection of the Caleb Williams era?
Tyler Dunn is a well-respected, highly sourced, really talented NFL writer, has been for a long time. This is eye-opening what he wrote. I think there are two different parts to it, and there are two parts to it. They're very different. One is looking ahead at Caleb Williams and why he's special and what the Bears see in him. The other one looks back and I think asks a question a lot of people in Chicago have had for a while. How does the past maybe affect the present and the future? How will the mistakes the Bears made in developing quarterbacks prior to Caleb Williams' arrival, will that affect or impact Caleb Williams' development into a star? I don't think it will. I think history is history. Ryan Poles was right. Leave it there. But Tyler Dunn does a nice job, in a very eye-opening job, of detailing some of the past problems. Justin Fields, for one. Toxic as hell is the way that it was described, the quarterback room, when it involved Andy Dalton, Nick Foles, and Justin Fields. They didn't get along, apparently, according to the people Tyler Dunn spoke to and quoted. Brad Childress was poison. to the coaching staff in the building. Another way that he looked at Matt Nagy brought him into the organization and he didn't do what he was supposed to do. A lot of things that make you cringe as you read them, and they don't reflect well about the Bears' recent history. I believe, as we talked to Tyler Dunn at 725, I believe that that recent history doesn't have to affect the future at all. Two different things. But it's a heck of a job reporting, heck of a job writing, and it's worth your time at golongtd.com.
Well, definitely worth your time. Definitely a deep dive. Spent a lot of time reading this on Sunday. And I also am really looking forward to this interview you guys have at 725. I thought the Brad Childress stuff, to me, was the most damning and the most make you go, when you looked at it. I was a little bit surprised with the Justin Fields stuff, but not thoroughly, because of what I had read about Brad Childress. And that you're going to find out more at 725, but it kind of leads you to why. I don't know that Andy Dalton and all the quarterbacks were just, in synchrony all together. It sounded like a really toxic environment, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting and worth the conversation, and we're going to get into it. But my greatest takeaway from all of it is, thank God they drafted Caleb Williams, because maybe finally, the Bears have a quarterback that can process information, that can come in here and that can read a field and throw the ball, and they can play like modern NFL football. And the fact that the previous two quarterbacks, both taken with first-round picks, they traded up to get Mitch Trubisky second overall, and he couldn't process information. And I think we saw what happened with Justin Fields, exactly the same problem, where you couldn't process information. And I asked David this morning if he feels that there's some morning during the season where we're going to come in here and we're going to be lamenting that the Bears are ruining Caleb Williams. I just feel something like that could be coming. I don't think it's going to happen immediately, but there'll be a game where you're not going to be happy about the result, and you're not going to be happy about the play calls or whatever it is. And I don't know that we're blaming the quarterback immediately, but that's the history that you want to avoid. The history that you want to steer as far away from as humanly possible is that the Bears have yet to really be able to function like a professional organization with a professional quarterback playing for them. And if that changes, then everything changes. And then you're on to a new era and all the rest of it. But the very fact that Sid Luckman still holds some passing records. I know Jay Cutler got a lot of passing records, and Jay Cutler was a good player, but he was a flawed player because the intangibles didn't work with him, the leadership stuff, the gambling stuff, turnovers. When there's a danger of throwing more picks than touchdowns, you're in trouble. I just think that when we look at the history of the Bears quarterback position, let's have a new start date. It's now Caleb Williams' job, and let's start with him, and let's not hold the previous administrations or the previous failures against him.
Yeah, because it doesn't really make any intellectual sense, and it really isn't fair to the current regime to – I'm not saying the story. I'm saying that
no, I know what
school
you're
of thought.
Yes.
Because Ryan Pace – rushed two quarterbacks to the field before they were ready. The coaching staffs that he hired weren't ready to develop them because he hired offensive coordinators that weren't equipped to put these guys in the best situation. And because you had two quarterbacks that weren't great at processing information. Really, intellectually, that has very little to do. There is no connection between that and Caleb Williams.
Well, and I think Ryan Poles tried to address that because – the reality is, whether it's fair or not, David, whether we should mention it or talk about it, it's a boogeyman position.
I understand that.
And that's
he's going to have to repeat it again. And then yes, he's going to have to repeat it again.
Exactly.
And he's going to have to amplify that as loudly as he can. If there's one message that Ryan Poles needs to concentrate on sending this offseason and going into next year, as he makes the rounds, and he will, certainly, it's that what happened before, what happened in the past – has no effect or bearing on what's going to happen in the future. Things are different now. Number 18 has arrived. Number 18 doesn't have anything to do with number 10 or number 1 or number, what number was Cutler? 6? Forget already.
You can't.
All of it's forgettable.
Do you have Shane Waldron's number? Because we need to give him a call and talk to him about this.
The organization is the common denominator, as 815 texts in. Yes, I understand that. The laundry is the same. The people aren't. And that's got to be something that people eventually come to accept. I get the cynicism. It's earned and it's appropriate. But I don't think it applies here.
If you are a Bears fan, the fact that there's a new start and a new refreshing beginning and all that, you're really looking forward to it. But frankly, when we talk about the past, it should scare the hell out of you. Because the past is those who don't study it, that don't learn from it, are doomed to repeat it.
I think the Bears have learned from it.
I hope you're right.
That was his point, I think. They have learned from the past.
That's what he was trying to say.
And they are not doomed to repeat it.
Well, here's hoping. And again, it's a lot of that's going to come down to how the guy can process information, and he's been doing it for a long time, and you feel good about that quality, and you don't want to hold him accountable for past errors. And that's the important thing to remember. But, you know, we're gonna talk to Tyler. I am a subscriber of the Go Long stuff. I get all of his stuff. I listen to his podcast. I think he does a really good job. And I like it. It's, you know, obviously they're in Green Bay, and they've got a perspective there that is totally different. And I love getting their perspective on all the NFL stuff. But we'll get a chance to talk to him. This is a really good piece that he did, and he talked to a lot of people. And clearly there's information that we haven't discussed. You know, you had heard that Justin Fields, for instance, was uncomfortable at the table, so they moved him to the podium. It's kind of what happened midway through a season. But we'll talk to Tyler about all that stuff. It's great stuff to discuss. Let's get to your calls. 312-644-6767, Mullion Haw on the Score.
I don't believe in living in the past. I think the past is for cowards. You live in the past, you die in the past.
Mullion Haw Flashback.
Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
Ronald Acuña Jr. is not hitting. He's not had a good start to the season.
See, now that sounds like you're looking for trouble.
Here's the 0-1. Grounded into left field, a base hit. Short around third, heading home. He will score. And it is 2-0. Acuña with his 11th RBI. This all started with two outs and nobody on. Doubles by Darnold and Short. And now a run-scoring single by Acuña.
What's his war? Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
How long have you been sitting on that one?
Who's that? Brandon?
Yeah.
I think you said it yesterday, so we've only been sitting on it for a day.
It seemed,
come up sooner. You know, you could have played him getting picked off first base.
He did get picked off first.
Yeah.
And he should have.
That was a bad one.
Been out with that check swing that was a strike, and Valentine, the first base ump, said it was not, and then Craig Counsell gets thrown out.
It was close. I mean, he swung. He's Ronald Acuña Jr.
He broke his wrist. I mean, he just went through. He did everything.
I agree. And I think that it was obvious to Craig Counsell, which is why he said something. And to get thrown out is just, that's crazy.
With all the technology that is governing pro sports, especially baseball, or baseball like every other sport, it's amazing that we don't have something that determines what is and isn't a check swing. I think that's the hardest judgment call for a baseball umpire, with due respect. But I think last night they got it wrong. But that's a difficult one to judge each and every time it happens.
You know, each and every time it happens, the guy went, okay? They just don't call it every time.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say 90% of the time that is a swing. Honestly, it really is. If you look at the rules.
More likely than not, you're correct.
But they sometimes don't call it.
So Acuña Jr. has one hit, three at-bats. He walked, and he did strike out.
Yeah.
So he's not all the way back.
He should have played a strike.
Yeah, thank you.
But he did have an RBI.
We'll see how the season goes. I mean, the series goes. I'll wait on it.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about it. They scored two runs, and he hit one of them. He drove in one of them. That's pretty good.
Well, they could have won 1-0.
It was the first run that counted, yeah.
Yeah, so they basically gave – he had the game-winning RBI. All right, Bernstein. So he's having a good year now?
No. He had an okay game. Okay right. game. So,
what did that increase his WAR to?
Yeah, he was a 4-5 or something. He's okay. He's having an okay year.
Okay.
Your point is this is an MVP candidate. He should be having a good year.
My point was and is if he were in Chicago – coming off the kind of season he had, a 47 a year, and he were off to the start that he's off to, we'd be saying, what's wrong with Ronald Acuña Jr.? What's wrong with him?
If we asked that about pretty much everybody, right? Well, Dansby Swanson, boy.
Even Belly at times.
Ian Happ, Belly.
Even Cody Bellinger.
Suzuki.
The $30 million man.
He's come back. He's hitting rockets. They're not going anywhere.
Exit velocity's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Boog.
Well, sorry for using baseball terminology. I didn't make it up.
Doesn't bother me.
There's all sorts of new hitting stuff that came out yesterday. You mentioned some of it with the
StatCast.
Yes, with the bat
bat speed. Yeah,
there's a lot of that stuff.
It's more than StatCast. Yeah, the Baseball Savant is measuring bat speed, and Christopher Morel was sixth in the league last week, I believe.
His bat speed's so good, he injured himself with it.
That must be it. No, he has a bad habit, bad luck. He fouls balls off his legs.
Yes.
And he's done it with his knee, he's done it with his foot, he's done it with his shin.
He did it yesterday to the point where he couldn't get to first base. He had to have someone pinch run for him.
PCA. PCA is the PR. So that's his new role with a crowded outfield. I don't know how long that's going to last. PCA may be the next guy out. Got to wonder. They need a right-handed power bat. They need a bat that is going to do some damage that they could go to in a game like tonight against a left-hander like Sale, and it's going to get them more than zero runs.
I was told Jake Slaughter was tearing it up at AAA.
No, he wasn't.
Tearing it up.
No, he wasn't.
But unfortunately, there's no spot for him. He's blocked, so they traded him for the reliever.
Hold your right hand up, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Did you know who Jake Slaughter was before you saw his name in a trade to the Mariners for Tyson Miller?
Oh, no, I did
okay.
not. Okay. I did not. Did you, Dustin? You didn't know Slaughter. I knew his rule.
Nor did I.
I had studied his rule.
Slaughter rule.
He's never even been a guest on the Fly the W670 podcast.
Yeah.
We try to interview some of the minor league guys.
He's never been a guest on David's show with Bruce.
Inside the clubhouse. Thank you.
That's what I was going.
There you go. David's show.
Yes.
It's Bruce's show. David's a guest.
Okay. 49 weeks.
Talk baseball.
That's not your show, but you're on that show.
Yeah, it's not my show. We're on that show. We talk baseball 49 weeks of the year.
He was on The Score with me and David Haught.
Love Bruce. Love that show. Get all the guests.
Yeah, you get every guest.
My thing with this move, let's see how it goes.
Who are you talking about? Miller?
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen's been so horrifically bad. It's something. You got to start somewhere.
No one's poo-pooing the trade. You got a deal.
There's no poo-pooing going on here.
No poo-pooing.
I just don't understand the DFA-ing. If he's DFA'd, why did they have to give him something? That's the part I don't understand exactly.
Usually it's cash.
Right.
But this time they gave him a pitcher.
On top of the bullpen and the pitching issues, don't they need offensive help? Isn't that down the line too? Because they can't really score runs. We've been talking about how they can't score.
Thank you.
Don't they need also on top of that a bat, like a power bat, something
else? The bullpen is blurring that need. You're right. They need offensive help. They're going to need offensive help. Good point. Good
so
point,
what,
Brandon.
So where does that come from?
Well, it could come from within. If there's a hot bat at AAA, Matt Shaw, Owen Casey, probably your ginger.
Well, Owen Casey's not doing great.
I know he's not. But
you got to get everybody in this lineup at one point. They really have not been together fully yet. I mean, right now they're missing Dansby Swanson, who hasn't been great. Right. But, I mean, every guy you add stretches out that lineup a little bit more. Going into the year, what was the – where's the power coming from, right? It was always where's the power coming from.
312-644-6767. We got a couple callers who want to talk about the Bears. We'll turn to that next. Mully and Haw on The Score.